So why, even if we have all those advantages and being resilient, are the most values-based banks still small?
Hey there, and welcome to Money for Change, the podcast where we discuss current developments and the role of money in creating a more balanced and just world. Of course, we want you to be part of this conversation. Head over to our website via the link in the show notes to share your thoughts or ask questions. Let's get started. Hi there, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of Money for Change. We hope you had a great summer. I definitely enjoyed my summer holidays, and now we're back at it with a lot of energy. My name is Emma DeLeo, and I am your host for today. We've got Hans Steegman with me, as well as Martin Rohner. And today's topic, we have the topic of values-based banks. While they're still a small piece of global finance, they're growing fast, and their focus is on financing the real economy. So the key question today is, how can the values-based banking movement influence and inspire the broader financial sector to adopt more responsible and sustainable practices? And can they live up to their promises to create systemic change in the financial sector?
That's a very long sentence, Emma.
Yes, it is. And we've got a great guest with us today, Martin Rohner, Executive Director of the Global Alliance for Banking on Values, or how we're going to refer to it, GABV. And we have Hans Steegman, Chief Economist at Triodos Bank, one of the founding GABV banks. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
So today's key question on the Money for Change podcast, can values-based banking reshape the financial system? Let's simplify the question a little bit.
That's a simpler question than you had before.
Exactly. All right, so we'll set the scene a little. The GABV was founded in 2009 by 10 pioneering banks, including Triodos Bank. It's now grown into a movement of around 70 financial institutions across 45 countries. For listeners that may not know the difference, what does it mean to be a values-based bank? That is a question for you, Martin.
I think values-based banks, they use their financial work to change the world. They want to really change the world. They put people and planet at the heart of their business model. They're really grounded in the real economy. They want to be transformational. They're very intentional about what they do. I think that's what sets them apart from other banks that might also be doing good things, but maybe not with the same intentionality and not with the same coherence. They might be doing different things at the same time, good things, bad things, you know, financing renewable energy, for example, and financing fossil fuels at the same time. Whereas values-based banks really very deliberately try to achieve an impact and produce the change we want to see in the world.
Maybe a question, what's the difference between values-based and ethical? Is there a difference or is it the same?
I don't think there's really a difference. I think that's a very good point, Hans. When we assess members for our membership, what we look at is how do these banks reflect on the ethical issues? So what are the guiding values? They might be very different. Values are very contextual. So you go to Bangladesh and it might be about poverty reduction. You come to the Netherlands and it's maybe more about climate change and mitigating climate change. What we look for is what's the attitude? And that's why culture is also a very important element in these organizations. What's the attitude, not just of the senior management, but the entire organization? How do they respond to these questions in the everyday business?
And you also mentioned they finance the real economy. Can you tell our listeners kind of what that means?
Yeah. So what we mean when we look at the real economy is that they finance brick and mortar projects, they finance entrepreneurs, they finance everyday activities, housing, agriculture. They're not the kind of banks that are primarily dealing in the capital markets and pushing money here and there, but that are really trying to be productive.
Yeah.
And do you still use the scorecard method to see if the banks that want to become a member are doing that to the right extent?
Exactly.
So I only know by heart that there was a certain method, but it is for me years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still there, right?
It has evolved and it's become a very powerful tool because we now are able to produce a dashboard where we really have a profile of the bank, where we look at both quantitative factors and qualitative elements. So, you know, hard data such as, for example, the composition of the portfolio, the lending portfolio, the investment portfolio, but also soft factors such as strategy, governance, human resource policies, etc.
So there is a way of measuring this. We always like that with this podcast, a little methodology right at the beginning. I think this sounds wonderful. I mean, I work at a GABF bank, so I'm already convinced. Do you think mainstream banks are starting to take some of these ideas seriously?
I do. And I say that really because we are increasingly being solicited by also mainstream banks, sometimes smaller banks, sometimes also larger banks, for very different reasons. I think some of them feel a certain discomfort because they know that the kind of the mainstream concepts of sustainable finance are not delivering on the impact we want to see in the world. Yeah. And so they simply want information. They want to understand value-based banking better. We've had other banks that have approached us in connection with their leadership development that want to have a contribution to their leadership development plan. And then we have some banks that have been contacting us because they have very concrete advisory needs, where we are connecting them with leaders from our movement or maybe previous leaders from our movement to help them work through those issues that they're looking at the moment.
But yeah, I see that and I also know that, but in the end, it's not rocket science, right, for those bigger banks. It's about values. So what are they looking for when they contact you? Is it so how do you do that and what's your business model and maybe we can expand our business model to have a new market because our clients want it? Or is it more in the core of how they operate?
I think you know this, Hans. When we're talking about sustainable finance and ESG, I feel like there's a lot of technocratic speech.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's piles and piles of reports that are being produced.
Emma also knows a lot about
And just as you were saying, it's not rocket science. It really goes really more back to the essentials.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the purpose of the institutions? What do they want to achieve? What are the challenges they see in the society or in maybe the environmental challenges that they want to resolve with their banking model?
Yeah.
And I think what they are intrigued about is that our members have been able to make this work and still actually be profitable. They're not profitable despite being values-based, but because they are values-based, they are financially resilient and successful. And so they want to better understand how that works. Now, you're absolutely correct. We always try to find out what's their motivation? Why are they contacting us? And I think sometimes there's really some absolutely justifiable reasons because I think they are realizing that they, as being large banks, have the clout, that they can change something in their marketplace where they're operating, that they could have a bigger impact, and they're struggling how they can get there. And they're looking towards some of our members because they see that banks like Triodos, for example, have been very successful in having that kind of impact.
You mentioned it already. It's not just morally appealing, but also financially viable. And you've seen that across a lot of different sectors and a lot of different countries across the banks. What about resilience? What about when the markets go down? How is the values-based banking, how does that react differently? Are they more resilient because they're tied to real economy or less fluctuating markets?
Exactly. So when we look at the bottom line, the financial bottom line of our members, what we look for is not their profitability per se, but the financial resilience. Our members might not be the most profitable banks, but what we have been able to see over time is that when crisis hits, we saw that during the financial crisis, we saw it again during Corona, our members outperformed the global systemic international financial institutions. Mm-hmm. They are less dependent on what the markets do because just as you were saying, they're grounded in the real economy. They don't have speculative business models.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I think the clients that they serve and the communities they serve, they're usually very loyal they feel very bound by these institutions. They so it's a give and take. So when things are going well and the client needs support from financial institutions, value-based banks are there for them. But when the financial institutions is in a challenging situation, the client typically also is loyal and pays back the loan. So I think that's what makes this relationship so strong.
Yeah, it's really more community-based and you're part of a system, a wider system, providing certain goods.
Yeah. And maybe also to ask that little bit uncomfortable question. Yes, I'd like to work at a values-based bank, but we're not the biggest bank. And we know banking is more and more a game of scale. So you need scale. So why, even if we have all those advantages and being resilient, are the most values-based banks still small? Relatively small, also in the Netherlands, if you look at Triodos Bank and the others, then we are one of the smaller banks. Do you have an explanation for that? Why this is still the case? Why are we not the biggest bank in the Netherlands, for example?
I think there's different reasons for that. I think value-based banks don't want to grow per se. Mm-hmm. To begin with, right? So it's inherent to their business model that it's going to grow organically. Secondly, let's face it, 30 years ago, they were challenger banks. They were born because there was an unease with where banking was heading and there needed to be a different business model. And so they started small. A colleague of mine just sent me a member assessment of a new member that started with a capital of $34 and today has $1 billion dollars
in
total assets. It's a credit union in Asia and it's fascinating, right? Yeah. So you have to look at the historical trajectory. Having said that, I still think it's very impressive to see where banks like Triodos, for example, or like Man City, or where like Laboral Kutxa today are. I wouldn't call them small banks anymore. I would call them mid-sized banks.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at the visibility and the profile and the clout they have in the market and the ability to bring their voice to the table, then I think you are at a point where the large banks are. And I think it has to do with the credibility that you bring with a values-based business model, because that just makes people listen certainly more attentively than maybe to a mainstream bank.
Yeah.
You're more transparent in what you stand for, perhaps.
I think credible, especially also. So I think your word has a lot of weight in the market.
Yeah. And Hans, what would be the answer to your own question of scalability in values-based banks?
Partly the same. Partly the challenge is if you only want to finance the real economy and really understand what you do, it's not what every bank is doing. And so it's also a different part of the economy that you want to finance. You don't want to finance the whole economy as a values-based bank because part of it is unsustainable.
Yeah.
So, and that was also what Martin started with. It's not that you have the ambition to become the biggest bank. And part of those balance sheets of those mainstream banks are not contributing to anything useful in the real economy. So that would also be an answer. And of course, then you have, because you're smaller and efficiency scale is intertwined, it also means that most of the time, you're not the cheapest bank.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. And that's also not your purpose, and that's not what you want to be.
Yep.
But that's an effect of how markets work. That's also a reason, I think. We have to be honest about it.
And can I maybe just add one more point? You know, we're looking maybe more at the European market where you have saturated markets.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's different.
Where the price can play a role in terms of growth, and of course also you need growth capital, and some of our members, they could grow more quickly and don't have the capital. But look at the emerging markets. The host of our last annual meeting, Centenary Bank in Uganda, is the largest bank in terms of customers and the second largest in terms of assets in its market. Look at BRAC Bank. Just a couple of years back, it was the number five in the market already. It was a startup bank 25 years ago. Then it was number five. Now it's the biggest bank in Bangladesh. What happened?
Interesting.
There was a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the mainstream banks in Bangladesh, they were affiliated and tied to the former regime.
Yeah.
There was a flight to safety. Where does the money go? To the Valley Space Bank. Now BRAC Bank is the largest player in the market. So just going back to your argument, you
really
know, actually some of our banks, they are very important and systemic.
Yeah, yeah, it's very good that you correct me. I always have that Western European bias in my head when I discuss this kind of thing. But I think that's... Can you also tell 70 members now of the GMV of all?
We have 71 members and expecting a couple more quite
and
soon.
And if you look... So it's I know it's all over the world, but is it mostly growing in emerging markets the last few years, or is it also
It's quite balanced, and I think that's what we're very proud about. So you have about 21 member banks in Europe, about 18 in North America. We just added two more in Africa, where we're only 7. That's our smallest chapter. Asia Pacific has about 15 banks. Latin America, about 11 banks. So it's really very diverse. Okay. And we have members all the way from Canada to Papua New Guinea. And I think that gives you an idea of the diversity.
It's global.
Really cool,
of the membership.
Great. I'm going to shift it a little bit because I've already kind of heard it from Hans. We're going to shift a little bit to an idea that's often linked to sustainability, and Hans definitely does this quite often, is degrowth. So degrowth is the notion that economies in the global north, they need to prioritize well-being and ecological balance over constant GDP expansion. Hans, from your perspective as an economist, I think I might already know the answer, but is values-based banking compatible with this shift away from growth at all costs?
Yep. I think you know the answer, but maybe it's also good to tell why we have that discussion also, and that for some people, confrontational discussion on GDP growth and yes or no, because I think for me, it's about system change. It's about the transformation of the system. And one of the icons of the current system is, of course, GDP growth, and our system is dependent on growth. And so that's why we need to discuss it. But that's not to say that I'm against progress. That's not even to say that I'm against growth, which seems like contradictory, but what we do as values-based banks and what also Triodos Bank is doing, yes, we finance a part of the economy that definitely needs to grow.
Yep.
Those sustainable activities, so at Triodos Bank, we have 5 transitions, but whatever and however you call it, it's about the energy, it's about food, it's about resources, it's about well-being and social.
Yeah. So it's about increasing renewable energy that can grow, but decreasing the fossil fuel energy.
It's about increasing sustainable agriculture and decreasing the
pesticides.
For instance, it's all the same. So, and while we are as values-based bank financing that part from our origins, because that's what we do, and part of the rest needs to be phased out. So on a I'm still a macroeconomist. Mm-hmm. On a macroeconomic, this might lead to less economic activity, but the economic activity that is there should really change from being unsustainable to sustainable. Mm-hmm. So it's the most optimistic story you can tell, the story about degrowth, because that's the system that we want to have. And that's where values-based banks are a part of. This is my interpretation, but maybe Martin has another interpretation.
Look, I think it's in the nature of human beings that they want to be productive, that they want to grow, they themselves grow, right? So I think that's just part of it. Maybe it's more a question of semantics. I think I was thinking about that question when you brought it to me, Emma, and I think when we're talking about growth, you said economic growth, then it's the kind of growth that you can measure in money, right? In financial units. And what we really need is that all the costs and all the revenues are actually measured correctly, and that the externalities that are today not visible or not felt are internalized. And I think when that happens, then we can have positive growth in that sense, because suddenly the positive economic growth can be measured. So for example, a cultural activity that is having a positive impact on society suddenly gets a financial benefit attributed to it, for example, right? So I think that's where the real challenge is. Now, I think values-based banks definitely, like you said, I think they're truly transformational. They try to help that transformation both actively and passively. Passively in the sense that they don't finance harmful activities mm-hmm. and focus on the positive activities, but actively also that they develop transformational business models and financing models that can accelerate that change we need to see.
So if we were to dream, if all mainstream banks were to adopt the principles of values-based banking, how would it look different? Would it be a lot more diverse, the financial system? Is that what I can gather from?
I think it would probably be more diverse. I think you would probably see that the mainstream banks would maybe be slightly smaller because some of the activities they're doing are simply obsolete because they frankly don't really add much value, at least not to the normal being on the street, because it's more about optimizing wealth maybe for a few.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those that the mainstream banks that really would truly embrace the principles of values-based banking, they would undergo a massive strategic and cultural transformation that is possible. I'm absolutely convinced it is even for a mainstream bank possible, but it wouldn't be easy. And the reason it wouldn't be easy is, among other, because they are listed on the stock exchange
mm-hmm.
and they would have to develop a very different risk return profile mm-hmm. than what they have today. And they would have to do that very carefully and calibrate their communication with their shareholders in a very careful manner to explain that transformation.
Yeah. I agree that would be a challenge, but at the end points, banking would be simpler, I think. So a lot of complicated products, making money with money derivatives, and not all derivatives are bad, but some of them. So it would transform banking in a sense that we understand better what we do with the money, because it's about real economy. So we want to understand where money goes, where money comes from. And I think that's the essence also of one of the essences of values-based banking, that you understand where your money goes, as one of our slogans also is.
But, a very simple concept that is surprisingly complicated.
So yes, the transition will be very complicated, even impossible maybe, but banking, and that's why I agree that it must be a smaller sector, because it's simpler, it's easier to understand, it's more transparent.
Yeah.
You mentioned, and that I think is an important element of values-based banking, you mentioned transparency. Transparency is important because it's the element of accountability of values-based banks. Values-based banks, they want to show depositors and shareholders where their money is going, what it is being used for. And that kind of accountability already kind of limits the kind of things that a bank can do, right?
Yeah.
Because you will very quickly run into reputational risks if you don't watch where you're putting that money to use.
Yeah.
Is that also why regulation on transparency in Europe, that's my European perspective,
mm-hmm.
is not going in the direction that we want it to be? So when we go back 10 years, the idea is new regulation on the financial sector to show, to be transparent about the where money goes in general. This ended up in only showing on the sustainability part where money is going, and now we see a backtrack mm-hmm. on everything. Mm-hmm. But would then, if we believe that clients are sensible people, and I think they are, and if they see that their money actually destroys a lot that they value, would that be the biggest game changer in finance, and that we in the end create values, that values-based banks is not... maybe not the right word, because people have values. And if clients see what is done with their money, is that living up to their values?
It would be the easiest regulatory policy, and it would be completely uncontentious. Who can be against more transparency, right?
Yeah.
And it should be simple transparency. It shouldn't be producing another 300-page report.
No.
It should simply be showing where the money goes.
Yeah.
Not more, not less. And that would be a game changer. I agree with you.
Sorry, Emma, I went off script.
It's definitely, I like the question though, and it's definitely transparency is the first step, but it's really, you know, the individual client probably won't hold a big bank or a big financial institution accountable. It's all about also identifying those stakeholders in the financial system to be able to raise their voices and their networks to also make these financial institutions or even corporations accountable for what they're reporting. That kind of leads to my last question. So if we were to meet again in 10 years, what do you think the GABV will have achieved in reshaping the financial system? And through what levers, what approaches are you taking in the next 10 years to spread the movement and to grow?
I would like to see that values-based banking is seen as the gold standard in terms of where the financial industry should be going, should be heading. My dream would be that in the next edition of the Sustainable Development Goals, values-based banking is recognized as just that, right? And what we're doing right now, I think, is we're raising the visibility for values-based banking in general, specifically for our movement. But on top of that, we want to have an impact beyond just our membership. I think today we have the scale that we are credible. We have, like you said, over 70 members. We're present on all the continents. Together, our members account for about $265 billion in total assets. We serve more than 50 million people. That's sizable, but it's still a drop in the ocean, but it gives us the credibility from where we can then operate and demonstrate that values-based banking brings better results for society and for the planet. And we're engaging first through our members at the national level, the local level, with regulators and policymakers. Triodos Bank is a great example for that. But at the global level, we're also moving forward in a more coordinated fashion and making sure we can learn from each other and have an impact, let's say, at the level of European Union or at the level of UNEP-FI. So I think what I am seeing when I go to these international meetings, and I don't think that was the case maybe 3-4 years back, that when I speak about values-based banking and the Global Alliance, people already recognize us today, but I want to make it clear that this is something also that is relevant for mainstream banks and not just for our members.
May I add something?
Of course.
I think in the coming 10 years, so there is a lot going on in finance, if we look at digitalization of finance, but also the globalization of financial streams. I think values-based banks should be the answer in the coming 10 years to make money the social relationship that it is, to make it human and to make it a force for change in society. And that's so opposite to what we currently see if you talk about Bitcoin with stablecoins, so the digitization of money streams anonymously. And that's where we should be, that we should show that there is an alternative model that is close to people, that invests in real economic needs for people and the planet. And that's my dream for the coming 10 years, that we have an alternative.
Well, thank you for that. I think that's very inspirational, and I hope you both predict the future in this podcast. We do have one last closing question. If you had 10 billion euros to change the world, how would you use it?
10 billion euros. Is that a lot nowadays, or is it little? It's hard to say.
Only people from the financial system sector ask that question.
Let me tell you
10
this.
Billion euros. All people say, oh, that's a lot.
What I would do, I would use it in two ways. First of all, I would use it to capitalize values-based banks, because in doing so, you can leverage it nearly 10 times.
Okay.
So you have an even much bigger impact than just 10 billion. And then, because values-based banks are a great investment, you get a nice return, I would use that return to help scale up and pilot and grow transformational business models of these values-based banks. Because there are certain market failures that prevent customers maybe making certain investments, which in principle would pay off, but maybe not today, but only in, you know, a period of 25 years or else. And I think that's how what we could do with that money.
Great. Very banker answer, I think, but it's a really good one, yeah. All right, Martin and Hans, thank you for joining Money for Change this week. And the listeners out there, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and share. and have a great week.
That's a wrap for this episode of Money for Change. We hope you found today's conversation insightful and inspiring as we continue to explore the transitions that are shaping our world and our future. If you enjoyed what you heard, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Thanks for tuning in to Money for Change.